Welcome to a special edition of the Marketplace Roundtable podcast featuring Jay Mintzmyer of Value Investor's Edge. Jay first began contributing to Seeking Alpha in 2011, building up a large following through his work covering shipping stocks, probably about as comprehensively as they're covered anywhere online or in print. Since 2015, Jay has run the Value Investor's Edge Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. The service offers intensive coverage of deep value opportunities in the shipping, energy, MLP, and industrial sectors. You can subscribe to Value Investor's Edge by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Jay Mintzmyer, that's Mintzmyer, or Value Investor's Edge into the search bar at the top of the site. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Seeking Alpha is a website where authors from around the world share their ideas and analysis on the stock market. The Marketplace is our platform for authors to run investing analysis and idea services so that readers can take their investing to the next level. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. And now your host, Jay Mintzmyer.
Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon if you're dialing in from Europe. This is another episode of Value Investor's Edge Live. We are recording at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on 4 November. We have with us today the CFO of Costa Marae, Greg Zikos. He is here with us to discuss the container ship markets, as well as Costa Marae's unique positioning in the market. Costa Marae reported their earnings last week, so Greg will be able to follow up on things that were reported in that result, as well as providing us some much needed market commentary. Disclosure before we begin, I currently have no position in Costa Marae. However, this is being recorded on the morning of 4 November 2020. So if you listen to this recording at a later date, those disclosures might have changed. Greg, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for inviting me this morning.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's nice to have a bit of a change of pace from the election news that has been, you know, just rolling in all last night and this morning. It's a sleepless night, I imagine, for most in the United States, regardless of politics, and I imagine for most in Europe as well. So let's focus on something positive, and let's talk about the container ship markets, because just the rates over there are amazing. What is driving this persistence in rates, and why have they spiked up so high?
Yeah, today in container shipping today we have a great market, and based on the latest information coming out from brokers, from like for instance Alpha Liner, the number of inactive fleet is close to 1.6%, which is a very low number, which also includes ships that are out of service for retrofitting, for scrub retrofits, or that some ships that are not seaworthy. So I think we have the supply and demand dynamics are very tight. We have a lot of cargo transportation demand, which is definitely strong, especially for this time of the year. I have to remind you that the fourth quarter, it is traditionally the slack period for container shipping. Now, this year, the low season has not materialized, and we have volumes boosted, especially by e-commerce demand, and especially in the U.S., and this also ties with the fact that you've seen the retail sales in the U.S. Going up. So practically what this means for container shipping, ships above 4,500 TEUs for the remaining of the year are all sold out. Charter rates have been going up. And I will have to give you a couple of examples so that, like, you see where we stand. The latest fixture we had for a Panamax vessel, this is like the 4,250,000 TEUs old Panamax ships. They are close to $20,000 per day. And as a point of reference, during the first two quarters of the year, let's say March, April of 2020, in the middle of the pandemic, those ships were getting between $7,000 to $8,000 per day. And now we're close to $20,000 per day. So also larger vessels like I would say ships like 6,500 or 7,000 TEUs. We have seen charters in the region of $27,000 per day. So it is a great market, especially for the larger vessels. Smaller ships, this means the feeder vessels, the 1,500 TEUs, the 1,700 TEUs, they have also started picking up substantially. However, overall, I would say that the larger sizes have in general outperformed the smaller ships.
Definitely makes sense. And it's what we're seeing as well by looking at, say, the Harpex or the Context or those different indices. A couple of follow-ups from your commentary there. There's been a lot of discussion around, you know, COVID-19 and the crew changes and port congestion related to that. And there's also been a lot of chatter about the Panama Canal and sort of congestion around that hotspot. So how much of this rise in trade and sort of the drop in the idle fleet, how much of it is related to like temporary pandemic things like the Panama Canal or the crew changes? And how much of it do you see is related to absolute demand, a growth between say US and Asia or Europe and Asia?
Look, I cannot quantify that, but I can tell you the positive market environment is mainly because of increased demand. If you look at the port calls, if you look at also retail sales, if you look at the inventory restocking, and also if you look at actual TEU demand on a month-on-month basis, you will see that it's mainly due to positive demand dynamics. At the same time, during the pandemic, liner companies, everybody knows, they were managing the supply of the vessels very, very efficiently. They didn't go for market share. We had a lot of blank sailings, which helped box rates being stable. However, after the end of the second quarter of this year, and especially after August, September, we have seen a tremendous pickup in demand. Liner companies, they have reinstated blank sailings, but the demand is still there, and also for the last quarter of this year. Now, there may be factors like a congestion or like a shortage of boxes. However, I think it's mainly because of pure demand, pure consumer demand. Very simply speaking, people are spending less money on travel, on services, and more on household items or sort of like buying also personal protective equipment or things that people normally buy through e-commerce. I think this is pretty much it. Now, I cannot forecast. I cannot possibly forecast. And as a company, we never provide any forecast regarding for how long this is going to go. But I'm just describing today's situation where we've seen tremendous demand coming from consumers. And the liner companies probably in 2020, they're going to have one of their best years ever. They are also benefited by the low fuel prices. We like having stronger clients. We like having healthy clients that sort of make money. At the same time, there is always increased demand for tonnage. As I mentioned earlier, ships above 4,000 TEUs for the rest of the year, they're practically sold out. Each ship coming off charter is chartered, relatively speaking, at a higher rate compared to last time. And this is the situation today. Also, we are seeing, and this is important, we're seeing liner companies willing to discuss longer charter periods compared to the sort of small charter periods, to the short ones we did experience in the first and second quarter of this year, which again, it is a positive thing.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. I appreciate you breaking that down a little bit. You know, investors in the shipping sector more broadly are kind of scarred from, for instance, the product tankers or the crude tankers, where there was a very temporary spike in rates. Of course, it was a massive spike, but it was not sustainable, right? It was just due to temporary market dynamics. And now you're seeing these container ship liners, which are producing probably the best year in the last decade. You're seeing the spiking Harpex Context. I think the Harpex is at a 9-year high. It's just like an inch off. I think it's like 2% off a 12-year high. And investors are naturally skeptical, right? So it's worth digging into some of the dynamics behind that. You talked about how the majority of the market is sold out, and you know, having it open ship in November or December is a very lucrative asset. And of course, Costa Maray has several ships that are coming up in November, December, February, January, or next 3 to 4 months. So I wanted to talk a little bit about those and see when we're going to have some more details. So I know you have a trio of 9,000 TEU ships that are coming up in November. Are those in discussions now, or when are we going to have details on when those are fixed? And what about some of the Panamax ships? I think you have 6 of those that are coming up.
Yeah, for the three vessels you are referring to, it's a total of 5 sister ships. The 2 of them, as we reported last week, we chartered them. Also, we extended the charter to Costco at a rate above $30,000 per day. The 3 sister ships, which are still to be coming out of charter over the next month, today they are getting something below $20,000 per day. So there's definitely a lot of upside there. Now, for those 3 vessels, there is a redelivery window, and the charters may hold on to those ships until the last redelivery date, bearing in mind that the market today is much higher compared to last fixture. However, those ships, they are all latest are coming off charter over the next 5 to 6 months, I would say. And today the market is definitely, I would say, 50% higher, at least, based on the rates those ships are getting now. Now, for the Panamax vessels, the Panamax vessels we have, they are chartered at some rates which are, they were chartered beginning of the year at rates which are below 50% of today's market. They're going to be coming out of charter, some of them like beginning of 2021 up to mid 2021. There's definitely, for those ships, I cannot predict where the market will be, but considering what we know today, there's definitely more upside than people would have thought at the beginning of the year.
Yes, it's certainly very interesting to look at that. So, yeah, understandable. There's going to be a few extensions. I wasn't tracking that the 11KT or the 9KTEU ships were up to 6 months from now, but that is interesting to know. How many potential charter renewals do you expect to have during Q4? I think you disclosed 13 on the call. How many should you expect when you get the next results?
I think, look, in our latest quarterly results, we mentioned that we have close to 13 ships coming off charter over the next month or so. And now I cannot predict how many ships are going to be coming off charter over the next year. It's difficult. But I would say that those ships coming off charter over the next months, the market today it's higher compared to the rates those ships are today yielding. But there may be some extensions for a shorter or like for longer period. And also there is a redelivery window where charterers may sort of decide, especially in a rising market, to exhaust the whole of this redelivery window time, which from a charter's perspective makes sense. So this is why it's difficult for me to predict. But I would say that we do have ships coming off charter over the next 6 months. And as we mentioned in the latest press release, it must be around 13 vessels, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. Of course, we're all watching those renewals very closely because, of course, they're all going to be very lucrative for your company. So watching those ones closely. One of the questions that's came up a lot with investor discussions is how far ahead you can charter these vessels. Because, you know, in the tanker market, right, it's a spot market, you can't really charter the vessel until right before it goes to pick up the oil. In the container ship business, especially with these longer term charters becoming back in favor, we're seeing 2-year, 3-year, 4-year deals. How early can you do those? Could you sign a ship that's coming up in December or January, or is it generally not done until the week or two before?
No, it's very different. No, if the charter wants the vessel, we can agree for a forward fixture 3, 4, 5, 6 months in advance, assuming that the charter wants the ships. So, I mean, we don't have to wait until last minute. I mean, normally it could be a couple of months. However, there are cases where, like, you can start discussing a vessel, especially in a rising market environment, 5 or 6 months in advance, and pre-agree a forward fixture for next year. This is doable.
Okay, yeah, it's very interesting. Of course, you know, back in August or September, the rates were rising and looked strong, and it might have seemed smart to do a forward fixture. And of course, now we're in November and the rates are far higher yet. So it's hard to know where they're going to move into the future, but I think a lot of investors are cautious and would generally like to see those things locked in. You know, we're seeing some interesting things in the secondhand market, that the net asset value calculations that, you know, analysts like myself and investors do are sort of weird in the container ship space. There's a lot of these middle-aged ships that are, say, 15 years old that are valued roughly at demolition value, maybe demolition plus 1 million. And of course, with the rates we're seeing in the Harpex and the context, you know, just 6 months of a charter would more than pick up that residual value. It seems very odd. Are you seeing those sort of things in the secondhand market, or do you think the NAVs and those sort of calculations are just lagging behind?
I think that generally, look, charter rates have come up a lot across the board, especially for the larger vessels, as mentioned earlier. Asset values are following, however, at a slower pace. So I don't think that today they have picked up 100% charter rates, especially for some asset sizes. But asset values have also been rising. So where the market is today to value a vessel, a 12 or a 15-year-old vessel at scrap, where the market is today, where, like, we see also older ships are being chartered. And in the previous quarterly results, we saw, we mentioned the one vessel, the 6,500 TEU 2000 build, which we chartered to Maersk, the York vessel, for above $20,000 per day. I don't think that this vessel today should be chartered at scrap, bearing in mind that this vessel can yield like an EBITDA of like, I don't know, $14,000-$15,000 per day over the next year and a half. So asset values gradually are coming up, probably at a slower pace, but I would say that they are coming up. NAVs should be going up, because this is logical, because definitely asset values should follow cash flows earned from those assets. This is logical and this is obvious. So asset values are coming up at a slower pace, but I think they are. And if you look at the latest Alpha Liner report, the weekly, it mentions today that we've seen increased S&P activity over the last quarter, which is something that it's not surprising.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense that with rates going up, the value of those older ships would increase as well. And you know, we saw in your latest earnings report that you had acquired three secondhand ships, kind of medium age, if you will. There was a 2,500 TEU ship. There was two Panamax ships. I think it was a 42 and a 5,600 TEU ship that you bought. Is there more opportunity in the market? Are there a lot of ships like that that are available for sale, or is that a pretty limited market?
There are opportunities. Look, the market is there and the market is very active. There are ships for sale. Of course, we need to make sure that we feel comfortable with how much we pay and like what is the residual value risk assumed and what is the upside for our shareholders. So the market is there, but every single transaction we do, we don't do it for the purpose of growing. It's just it needs to make sense and it needs to be justified on its merits. So we look at things, we are active, but I mean, we take our time and we want to make sure that the prices we buy at do leave upside for our shareholders.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense that you want to compare the return on equity and that sort of thing, as well as the expected life of the vessel. The other side of that spectrum, of course, would be a new building with, of course, a charter attached to it. There was some rumors, I think, in Tradewinds and some other places that Costa Maria was involved in some of these discussions. Of course, I imagine that's always ongoing. Can you talk a little bit about the new builds? How much interest is there in new builds? And what are the sort of returns that you're seeing in a new build charter market versus the secondhand market?
Look, Costa Mare, we have been traditionally doing new building deals. Not now, but over the last 20 years or 30 years or so. New building, it's something we have been doing, and this is part of our strategy, and this is part of our business. Now, we have not seen any new building deals recently because of the circumstances. This is a market that may be opening up. In the future, there may be some projects. And this is something that in the future we will look into it. Which is, as I mentioned, it's part of our core business. Now, in the new building and business, and now we have two more ships to be delivered from a new building deal we concluded a couple of years ago. We look at the quality of the charter party, and we look at the contracted cash flows over the next 5, 7, 10 years, whatever the new building deal is, most probably 10 years or longer than that. And we want to make sure that first we cover our downside, our equity risk, and then, of course, there needs to be some upside for our shareholders. This is pretty much it. We follow the same recipe we have been following as a private company before going public in 2010. So this is an integral part of our business model.
Let's shift a little bit and talk about capital allocation choices. So we talked about the growth options. You can either acquire secondhand tonnage or you can acquire new build tonnage. And of course, each deal is unique and needs to stand on its own merits. Let's talk a little bit about your financing profile, and then let's talk about shareholder returns. So first of all, on your financing profile, you've recently assigned new debt deals. There's no near-term maturities. And of course, the interest rates have been falling. However, you have a lot of legacy preferred equity outstanding. And some of that preferred equity is at a fairly high rate, especially in today's like zero interest rate environment. Is there any sort of focus on maybe bringing down some of that preferred equity or doing some sort of new issuance at a lower percentage rate? Or should we think about that as sort of fixed equity and not changing?
Look, this preferred equity, I know that it is expensive, but normally the preferred issuance, they are more expensive than debt or sort of some other forms of equity because they do provide you with a lot of flexibility. You can repay part of it. You can repay all of it after a five-year period. It's a fixed rate. You're not subject to interest rate fluctuations. I know that the interest rate today at record low levels. However, it does provide you some protection because these are two perpetual instruments, and in our case, there are no step-up options. So this is something we know. It depends. The capital allocation process, it's got to do with the questions. I mean, we have cash on the balance sheet. We have no meaningful maturities up until 2024. We've done a lot of refinancings. It depends on how much equity we need for new deals, whether second-hand or like new buildings. And we have put in place a buyback program for preferred. And this is something that we may be utilizing in the future. This is a board decision, but all options are open. But it's mainly a function of how many deals we think that are worth pursuing. Compared to, as opposed to buying back some of the preferred, which I do agree, especially the last one, it is at a high coupon.
Yeah, certainly. And for investors, you know, listening now or listening later on a recording, the two issuances that stick out to me is your Series C and your Series D, which have an 8.5% and an 8.75% coupon. And they both trade at small discounts, which bring up the active yield basically about 9% for both of those. So it certainly makes sense that if you wanted to pare those down, you would probably use a repurchase until it got to 25. It obviously, if it's above 25, you have call options. You could just buy those back. Is it fair to say that that kind of is your ROE, your return on equity hurdle, is basically that 9% that the preferred equity trade at? And if you can't find a deal that's better than 9%, you would just repurchase the preferred?
Look, we have not disclosed what's sort of our target ROE, but I mean, obviously our returns need to be higher than our cost of capital. And especially, but it's got to be the work. It's got to be the mixed cost of capital, okay? Because you we use equity, we may be using commercial bank debt. Plus, we have this preferred stock outstanding. But definitely, the returns need to cover our sort of cost of financing and cost of capital, whether it's debt or equity. And the surplus, it is the common stock shareholders' return. I agree with you.
Yeah, certainly. It certainly makes sense. You know, there's a lot of questions. Of course, ROE always comes up, and you know, I point to the preferred, and I'm like, well, they need to get at least 9%, otherwise, it would make more sense to buy those down. Let's look at the other half of that, which is the common stock and the dividends there. So you had a very strong dividend with your IPO, and you actually raised the dividend a few times. But then we had the issues in 2016. A really brutal market where we had the Hanjin bankruptcy, we had all sorts of issues in the market, and you had to cut your dividend significantly down to 10 cents. Now that earnings are back on the upswing and we're getting longer term charters and things are looking healthy, your balance sheet is very stable now. When is a sort of window or a potential or a signal that investors can start looking towards dividend raises again?
Yeah. First of all, I need to highlight that we, as you rightly pointed out, we have raised the dividend a couple of times in the past. We did lower it. We adjusted it in 2016. However, we have been paying a dividend every single quarter since going public, since 2010. So there was no quarter that, like, the company has not been paying a dividend. Now, the dividend decision is a board decision. We like dividends. We like dividends. Also, we own 60% of the company, and the dividends paid is something the founding family is also receiving, and you have fully aligned interest. I think that a potential increase on the dividends, and I have to stress again that it's not my decision, this is a board decision, but my opinion is that a potential dividend increase should come alongside a long-term increased cash flows. We have the balance sheet in place, we have the cash on the side, we never had any issues with our debt arrangements, quite the opposite, but I think that a dividend increase for us today would be an easy thing to do. However, in order to be sustainable and to make sense in the long run, should come alongside increased cash flows coming from creditworthy charters.
Yeah, certainly makes sense. We want to make sure the asset base is stable before raising the dividend prematurely, of course. And of course, there's a lot of things to consider. For repurchases of the common shares, is that something that comes into calculation, or is Costa Maray just solely focused on dividends as a return of capital?
I think we've never done any common stock repurchases. I mean, we have the option to repurchase the preferred. We normally increase shareholder value through asset acquisitions, buying, financing, and operating those assets. I'm not ruling this out. However, this is not something that we have been traditionally doing.
Understandable. Yeah, it'd be just interesting to see that if the share price continues to lag behind, you know, of course, the rising asset values and the rising charter rates, it would be interesting to see if that's an option on the table or not. And of course, that'll be probably a topic for the next conference call. Hopefully it's not a topic, because hopefully the share price is appreciating right along with the earnings and the asset values. Looking back, yeah. I think as we start to wrap up this call, I do want to return to the broad container ship market and ask just a couple questions there. In your overall comments, you gave an example of some of the Panamax rates. You gave an example of some of the feeder ship rates. I am a little curious about some of the larger vessels, because there's not quite as active of an index. For example, for the Panamax ships or the feeder ships, for investors that are on the call now or listening later, you can just Google what's called the HARPEX. And there's a very active index. It's updated every Friday. It shows you basically what the rates will be. It's quite accurate. What about for the larger ships, Greg, like the 11Ks or the 14Ks or those sort of sizes? What's a good market source for that? Or what sort of things are you seeing in terms of rates? Are they rising quite as rapidly or not?
Yeah, you cannot find a lot of info there simply because there are no recent transactions, because all those ships are chartered. So, I mean, we didn't have any meaningful chartering activity for those vessels recently. Also, for the 9.5, the closest I can get, the latest fixture is above 30,000 we did for a year and a half. For three of our vessels we announced last week. There has not been any activity or sort of any serious activity for like 14,000 TEU vessels. The 14,000 TEU ships we have them chartered for close to 46,000 up until 2026. So, and there are no ships coming off charter of that large sizes anytime soon generally. So it's the 8.5, the 9.5, and maybe some 11,000 in the future. We have some 11,000 TEU ships coming off charter next year, next year. So I'm afraid that the market activity there is extremely thin. So, and this is the reason you don't find any data. However, I have to say that considering today's supply and demand dynamics, I think it would be fair to say that generally, should some of those ships come off charter today, the market for those ships would be very, very receptive from the liner's perspective.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense, Greg. And of course, I follow all the container ship companies, so just trying to get every bit of information I can on this call. I know you have a couple 11Ks up next year. I think the first one is the Tanaro and the Sunio, if I'm saying that right. I think they're both up in March. Is there a sort of is there an extended delivery window associated with those, or should we expect a new deal by February or March?
We'll see. I mean, we're going to be discussing with the charterers, and then we'll see. I'm afraid that for those vessels, I cannot discuss anything right now. They are coming open next year. It's a bit premature to discuss them at this point. However, those ships, as you see, they're getting above $30,000 per day. And I would say that generally the market for those type of vessels today, especially those ships that are 2017 built, 2016 and 2017 built, the market for those ships today is generally speaking, very hot.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed and keep watching those rates and hope for the best. So, Greg, thank you again for joining us. One last thing before you leave. I've kind of mentioned it to you before, but just so we're here on the recording, I would strongly encourage you, if you have time in maybe the middle of December or early December, if you have time to put out a new investor presentation and make an official filing and update us on some of those charters. I think that would really help investors. I think information comes at a premium in today's market. And a lot of these rates are fantastic, but seeing is believing, right? And seeing the company confirm that all these ships are chartered would be definitely very helpful.
Noted, you're right. And this is something that we plan to do.
Excellent. Thanks again for joining us, Greg.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you, appreciate it.
We've just hosted Greg Zikos, the CFO of Costa Mare. This has been another episode of Value Investor's Edge Live. We're recording at 11 o'clock Eastern on 4 November 2020. As a reminder, nothing you heard here today constitutes investment advice in any form, nor official company guidance. I have no current position in Costa Mare. However, that may change in the future.
If you've been enjoying the Seeking Alpha Marketplace Roundtable podcast, you can subscribe through iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher. You can also give reviews on those platforms to help other investors discover this podcast. Jay Mintzmyer runs the Value Investor's Edge Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. You can subscribe to Value Investor's Edge by going to seekingalpha.com and typing Jay Mintzmyer, that's Mintzmyer, or Value Investor's Edge into the search bar at the top of the site, or by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for Value Investor's Edge there.